Welcome to the Who's Counting podcast with Cleta Mitchell, the podcast about America's elections. Hello. Welcome to Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell. This is a podcast about elections, everything to do with elections, how elections are supposed to be run, how sometimes they're not run the way they're supposed to be, and what we as citizens can do about it. And today, we have a great guest that someone I think you'll all really enjoy meeting, and that is the Honorable Jay Ashcroft, who is the Secretary of State for the state of Missouri. So welcome, Mr. Secretary.
Thanks for having me. Always glad to talk elections.
First, before we get into the substance about elections and voting and some of those substantive issues, tell everybody a little bit about your background.
Grew up in a political family, decided at an early age I would never go into politics, would never go to law school. Went into engineering, a couple degrees in engineering, worked in the defense industry, taught mechanical engineering for about 6 years. Then ended up going to the dark side, going to law school. And before you knew it, about 8 years later, I ended up in politics anyway.
So what was your first office that you ran for? Was it Secretary of State?
I ran for a state Senate seat in St. Louis County. And although I was quite positive that I was the best person for the district was quite certain that I was wrong. And I didn't make it. And in all honesty, I did not represent that district if I had been elected.
Well, I was kind of thinking about that. St. Louis, we don't normally think of that. That's a pretty heavily Democratic area, right?
It was. It is.
So you didn't win the state Senate seat, probably a blessing. Sometimes God doesn't give us what we think we want. I lost a lieutenant governor's race once, and that's what I always say. I'm still mad about losing, but glad I didn't win, if that makes any sense.
It does.
So then what happened? What was your next race?
Well, I was a loser. I had lost my state Senate race. I hung my head in shame, and people from around the state started coming up to me that were involved in politics and said, hey, you did a great job. You almost won. Look at where you're running. If you ran statewide or in another area, you'd win. And there were about four different options that people suggested to me, and I didn't know what to do. I knew that God had wanted me to run for the state Senate, and my wife and I just prayed. And we put impediments in front of the options that we had to continue to run for something else and said, God, if you don't remove these impediments, I'll just practice law, I'll go back to engineering. And the day before I ended up announcing, the day that the current Secretary of State announced that they were going to be running for the U.S. Senate, Jason Kander, a Democrat, the impediment to me to be able to run, the other individual that I'd said I would support said, I'm not ready to run. You go ahead and run.
So when was that?
That was in 2015, in the lead up to the 2016 election.
Okay, so you were elected in 2016 as the Secretary of State and then reelected in 2020.
2020, yes.
And so you're term limited now.
Technically, no. In Missouri, we're not term limited. Only the governor and the treasurer are. But I have made it clear that I will not run for another term as Secretary of State. I think that when people sit in an office too long, they start to think it's theirs and forget that it's the people's.
Well, I moved to Washington, D.C. from Oklahoma to be the legal counsel for the Term Limits Campaign, the National Term Limits Movement. So, and I was co-counsel in the Term Limits case before the U.S. Supreme Court. So I agree with you about remembering that these offices belong to the people and not to those who temporarily sit in those seats. But well, I must say, you mentioned you're from a political family. If people have not figured that out, yeah, your dad is the Honorable John Ashcroft, former U.S. Senator, former Attorney General of the state of Missouri. Was he also governor?
Yeah, he was state auditor, he was state attorney general, and he was a governor and then went on to be U.S. Senator and United States Attorney General.
Yes. Well, I just want you to know that I met him right after he was elected to the Senate. And in 1994, and got to be friends with him. I consider him a friend, and was very actively involved in helping support his nomination when he was nominated to be the United States Attorney General by then President George W. Bush, and just have a very fond place in my heart for your dad.
Well, thank you. my family, I claim, is the stereotypical political family. My sister is 4 years older than me. My younger brother is 4 years younger than me. So if people had not supported my dad, I'm not sure I'd be around, because I think every time he won an election, mom said, well, we can have another child. We can afford it.
That's great. Well, please give him my regards. He's well thought of. He's well thought of by so many people across the country. So I had the great occasion to meet you about a year ago, talking about some issues related to an organization called ERIC. And what I realized is that you've been a very thoughtful leader as the Secretary of State, not just in the state, but also nationally. And I'd like to just have you, we'll come back and talk a little bit about ERIC in a little bit, but I'd like for you to share some of what you feel are the accomplishments and the areas that you've really focused on as Secretary of State, because we want to share that with other Secretaries of State and have them follow in your footsteps. So tell everybody what you feel are the key principles and matters that you've focused on during your time as Secretary of State.
Well, I ran in 2015 and 2016 on finally having a government-issued photo ID requirement in the state of Missouri. It only took us about 17 years from when it was first thrown out by the Missouri Supreme Court in 2006. Election integrity has been very important to me. If you look at the Heritage report card on elections, they would say that Missouri has moved up more spots faster than anyone else. We used to be clinging to the 10th spot. They now have us in the top three. I'm proud of that. There's more work to be done. I have securities underneath me. I do all the civil regulation of securities in the state of Missouri. So we've been a leader on ESG and making sure that investors know what they're investing in and that they are approving what their advisors are investing them in. If they want to be invested in social things, that's their right. But if they're not being told, it's fraudulent and we'll go after people. I provide funding for state libraries in the state of Missouri. So our state has been at the forefront of making sure that parents are in charge of what their kids are reading, that librarians are making it easy for parents to be in charge of that, that libraries are set up to make sure that we're not pushing things into kids that are not age appropriate, and that we have a public, easily understandable policy for challenging so that parents are truly in charge. It's taxpayer money. Taxpayers should be in charge. And, you know, another thing I did that will never appear in a campaign commercial, back in 2018, I was part of NASA's push to see how we can do notaries better, how we can use electronics, how we can use computers. When the government has to do it, how do we make it easier to deal with the government? And after 3 years and a global pandemic, we finally got remote electronic notaries done, which will make it easier for people to do business and get the government further to the side when they're in the way.
Okay, so this is the National Association of Secretaries of State. That's NAS.
Yeah, okay. Back when I was a member.
Oh, okay. Well, all of these national groups tend to be a little bit to the left, unfortunately.
Well, they are, and they are a national group, so they try to nationalize things. And I'm a firm believer that elections are not supposed to be nationalized, that elections should be run by states. I would say that there are three principles that I think every state should agree on. I think that there should be accessibility, there should be security, and there should be credibility in our elections. But beyond that, nationally, I think that individual states should determine what works best to have that accessibility, that security, and that credibility in their elections.
So let's take each one of those in turn. So the first is accessibility. What are your thoughts about accessibility, and would you say that voting is accessible in this country?
Oh, I think voting is extremely accessible in this country. The one thing I would say is I don't think we should just look at accessibility. I think if you're going to do it right, you have to look at all three of those together, because you need to make sure that when you are ensuring accessibility, you're also ensuring security, and you're ensuring credibility that people will believe the outcome when you're done. I think far too often we've kind of taken this stance, and maybe it's because of how politicians have acted in the past, that government can't chew bubble gum and walk. We need to do all three of those things, accessibility, credibility, and security, at the same time, or it's a bad election.
So what are some of the security measures that you mentioned voter ID? What are some other types of things that you think states should enact to make sure that they are securing the election?
Well, like if you want to talk about security and accessibility, we're really pushing people in this state, if they're going to be voting absentee, to vote in person. That makes sure they can still vote. We give them time to do that, but then we're verifying who they are when they vote. And we're making sure that when they do vote, that ballot counts. They're not hoping that the post office gets it there in time. They're not hoping that the ballot can be read easily when they turn it in. They're not hoping they send it to the right place. They are getting the ballot. They are filling it out. They're putting it in right there in the polling place. That's the best ballot security and chain of custody you can have. So that's a great thing. Requiring to know who people are. Requiring that we have paper ballots. So that there's not just a bit or a byte that's being flipped on a black box where that vote is. But when there's a recount, when there's a challenge, here is the physical ballot. We can go through all of those. We got rid of drop boxes. They hadn't really been used in the state of Missouri much. There are a couple of counties that use them. They weren't necessarily allowed, but they weren't prohibited. We said, let's get rid of those. We got rid of Zuckerbucks, the idea of private funds being used to fund our elections. There is a misnomer in this country that election authorities don't have enough money. The federal government has shoveled massive amounts of money to election authorities across this state. And it's not just to have good elections. It's to change how elections are done. Because you can change policy by passing a law. You can change policy by passing money. And the federal government has been trying to change how we do elections by increasing the amount of money available. So, well, how are we going to use it? Well, we might as well use it so that we can do this. We might as well use it so that we're allowing this service that I think a lot of people would say, wait a minute, why are we really doing that? Is that giving us the combination of accessibility, security, and credibility?
Well, I think what you're saying is if you guarantee and provide strong measures for accessibility, which we already have, and you make sure that the election system is secure, that will produce the credibility that people will then have confidence that the election was conducted appropriately.
It will, but there are also things you can do with transparency so mm-hmm. that people are seeing as much of the process as possible. And I'm in favor of people seeing everything but how an individual votes, because I want to keep this
with
secret
you. Absolutely.
Secret. But that's making sure that it's easier for people to be poll workers, to be poll watchers, to be poll challengers. We're not afraid of people coming behind the curtain and seeing how we do things. If we're doing something wrong, we want someone to see it and tell us so we can correct it. And if someone has a better idea, we want to steal it and take credit for it.
I love that. Well, you know, you said something a moment ago that honestly, I have thought, and when I hear these people say that election offices don't have money, they don't have resources, and then I see these offices thinking that it's their job to get people out to vote and to make sure that they have good voter turnout. And I think to myself, no, your job is to administer the election in accordance with the law and to treat everybody equally and not to favor one group of voters over another and manipulate and allow your election office to be manipulated by partisans. And I believe that that has been such a focus the last several years that they're not spending the money that they need to spend on just making sure that they can conduct the election properly.
You know, I think a lot of us, you go back 5 years, 10 years, we thought that there was nothing wrong, or we didn't realize how partisan offices could be with voter registration and get out the vote. I think the thought was that if we were doing something like that, we were just helping everyone. And then we see what happened with Zuckerbucks and the like. Right. And then we realize, wait a minute, you really can put your thumb down on the scale by doing that. And that's what we shouldn't do. We shouldn't do anything that gives anybody a reasonable suspicion that we might be putting the thumb down on the scales. Today's opening day for my Cardinals and my Royals. Yeah. So to use a baseball analogy, we should be the umpire that you don't notice, because we call the balls, we call the strikes, we call it correctly, and nobody notices us.
Well, you know, Mr. Secretary, one of the things that is very worrisome to a number of us is this, it's sort of round two or Zuckerbucks 2.0, this U.S. Alliance for Election Excellence. And it's honestly, it's this program, and we've had a podcast about it before, but it's run by the same organization that handled all the Zuckerberg money, this Center for Tech and Civic Life. And now they've got all these partners, and they'll give a grant to an election office, and then you use that, election offices, you use that to pay them to bring in their litany of partners to help you run your election better. But all of them are on the left, and they demand all this data, proprietary, non-public information to be turned over to them. And I think these guys are geniuses. And this time, it's Bill Gates, the billionaire, who's giving them the money to do that. So we've got, you know, Mark Zuckerberg, the billionaire, and now we have Bill Gates, the billionaire. They never stop thinking of ways to try to influence the election offices and put their thumbs on the scale. How do we stop that?
Well, what we did in Missouri, when we saw what had happened to Zuckerbucks, we tried to make sure that we weren't fighting the last war and that we were planning for the next one. So we didn't just ban private money for our elections. We actually specifically enumerated the in-kind contributions that could be given to an election authority also. So you, no money, no grants, no in-kind, except for they can provide water to poll workers, they can provide food to poll workers, and they can provide PPE, be that hand sanitizer, masks, if we ever have a global pandemic. But our law was written to say, what are they going to do next? And I think actually under our law, even though we've had some jurisdictions that have joined that organization, I don't think they will be able to legally do that because of the way we wrote our law, trying to look to the future. And I'm definitely keeping my eye on the jurisdictions that have joined them here in Missouri.
Well, we have some citizen researchers who've been looking at these various counties around the country, and I'll gather whatever information they have from any, if there are any from Missouri, and I'll make sure you get that. But we talked a little bit about ERIC, the Electronic Registration Information Clearinghouse. Is that what it is? tell everybody, we've had some podcasts about ERIC, but you're somebody who really studied that very hard, went into it not to be influenced by the likes of me or anybody else.
we've cussed and discussed about it.
We did. And but you worked hard on it and then made a decision to withdraw. Talk to everybody about what the organization is, what you, what steps, your thought process, and ultimately your decision, which many of us applauded when you announced that Missouri was going to withdraw from it.
Well, putatively, it's an organization that's supposed to help election authorities and states clean their voter rolls. But also it should be a great resource for states to look for cross-state voter fraud, people that are voting in multiple states in the same election. And it has some utility for that, but nowhere near what it could have. I joined it with the hope that it would give us national change of address information more frequently than we were getting at the time, that it would give us more frequent updates on Social Security death records than we were getting at the time, that it would help us to clean up those voters. We used to be a part of CrossCheck, Missouri, Kansas. But unfortunately, as we were a part of it, and there were some things that it helped with, we also realized that there were limitations to the system. Five of the eight states that surround Missouri that touch us were not members. There were limitations on how we could use the data that we were paying for and that we were providing that we could use in other parts of government. We were not allowed to send citizenship data when we had that. Well, clearly, if we're trying to clean up our voter rolls and we know someone's not a citizen, now they may have become a citizen because it's not that uncommon for people to not be citizens and 10 years later to become citizens, but we should be able to share that data. We saw that there were partisans involved with the board that, well, we shouldn't have any partisans. And when I brought that up, they said, well, we can put a partisan Republican on there. I said, no, This shouldn't
no
be partisan.
Partisans.
Shouldn't be bipartisan. It should be nonpartisan. We're just the framework. Let the campaigns and the candidates be the partisans. And then, of course, we were restricted in the cross-state data for looking for people that had voted in multiple states in the same election because they wouldn't require other states to provide that information. And then with what we saw happen with the Zuckerbox and targeted voter registrations that had a partisan intent, we had concerns with going to people that had already said they didn't want to be registered and harassing them and saying, no, we want you to register. Registration and voting is a right that the people have, and they also have the right not to do it. So I worked for over a year to try to get some limited changes in the organization. I didn't ask. There are a bunch more things that I thought needed to be changes, but I said, okay, here's a list that I think ought to be nonpartisan. They ought to be easy for people to agree with, and they make sense. Worked for a year, worked through the process with Eric and with other secretaries, and then in February, they refused to pass them. So it really wasn't that I left Eric. It was that Eric refused to do what it needed to do, and they made the choice for me. But I will say that because I had gone through that effort of reforming it, when people asked why, I could say, here's why. And I think that that helped Florida. I think that that helped West Virginia. I think that that helped Iowa. And I think that helped Ohio to leave also, that I had started and worked that process and said, look, guys, I mean, obviously they had their own concerns, and they did great work too. But I think that helped to say, we need to do something differently, and this isn't working.
Well, I absolutely believe that you're 100% right, because you were intent upon trying to make it better, and went through the entire process. And then for you to step forward and say, I've done everything I can do to try to make changes. They're not going to make changes, so we're leaving. You have a lot of credibility with people because of that leadership.
I hope so. There are a lot of people that think I should have left a lot earlier.
Well, you know.
Including you, I think.
I'm just glad you left. No, I was actually glad that because I knew you were going through a thoughtful process. And so I was very much appreciative of that, because ultimately, you know, look, I'm a big believer that the elected official who calls the shots ultimately has the responsibility, and I can do what I can do, but it's ultimately that person's decision because they got elected and I didn't. So, but you have a very interesting thought also about voter registration that I would love for you to share with people, because I think it's a very thoughtful and actually accurate position.
Well, I think we have a real problem that the federal government has asserted control over voter registration in our country. And if you look at the United States Constitution, what people will most talk about will be the Elections Clause. It came up in Moore v. Harper, which I'm thankful that it looks like the court is not going to have a holding in that, because that would have been problematic. But if you look at the Elections Clause in the United States Constitution, what's colloquially called that, it says that the states will have subordinate power and the Congress will have the preeminent power with regard to time, place, and manner of federal elections. Well, time is clearly when you hold elections. What day is it? Or should be what day is it? Now it's in most places.
3 months.
What month is it? Or what period of time is it? The place is, where are you doing it? Where are you holding the elections? Where are the polling places? How are people going to be able to get there? That sort of thing. And then manner is, how are you actually voting? Is it a voice vote? Is it by paper ballot? Is it secret? Is it equipment for people that might otherwise be unable to use a paper ballot? It doesn't include registration. And then if you actually look in the Constitution, if you look at the 17th Amendment, where it says who gets to vote for the U.S. Senator, because those used to be elected by our legislature, they're now directly elected by the people. It says whoever is allowed to vote for the largest legislative body of the state. If you look at United States House of Representatives, it says whoever is allowed to vote for the largest legislative body of the state. And then, of course, there's special presidential elector terms. So I think the Constitution is very clear that registration should be controlled by the states as long as you're not running afoul of a constitutional amendment for the age, dropping that to 18, as long as you're making sure that women's suffrage, which was passed through a constitutional amendment, and of course you can't discriminate by race, or poll tax, that sort of thing with voting. So I think it's very important that states take back that. We saw H.R. 1 that was talked about for really 2 years that would have said you have to have same-day voter registration, you can't require proof of citizenship, you can't require government proof of identity, you can't require proof of residency for who's allowed to vote. Those are all unconstitutional. There was a case out of Arizona that was moving forward, but when the Republican lost that race for attorney general, I think that case will probably end up dying. But I'm looking for ways to get to the Supreme Court and say states are in charge of that. In 2018, we had a hard-fought U.S. Senate race between Claire McCaskill, at the time Senator Claire McCaskill, at the time Attorney General Hawley, now Senator Hawley. We had tens of thousands of fraudulent federal registration forms that were turned in because of the federal law requiring us to use that. And we actually had at least one individual that I know of was disenfranchised because her registration was changed and she wasn't allowed to vote in that election.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, I absolutely agree with you, and I am going to work with some of these new House committees controlled by some Republicans and see if they wouldn't have some hearings and focus on that. Would you be willing to testify and bring your...
I've got a big mouth. I'm always happy to testify.
Well, I really do think that this federal voter registration card is a menace, and it's a menace in particular for overseas voting, because there's absolutely no security to that at all. And that has been completely turned upside down because the UOCAVA, the Uniform Overseas Citizens Voting Act, it used to be, I always thought of it as military voting. Except that in 2020, 63% of the UOCAVA vote was civilian.
It is well beyond that. And sorry to interrupt, but the thing that a lot of people don't know is if you're going by federal law, I can't clean the voter rolls within a certain time period before an election. There can be names that I know are dead. There can be people that I know are imprisoned and have lost their right to vote. There can be people that have renounced their citizenship or have moved and registered in another state, and I'm forbidden to clean the voter rolls? That's ridiculous. Yeah.
It is ridiculous. That law, that federal law, will be 30 years old this May. And I think it's high time it's either amended or a court case invalidates it. But I think that that whole thing is just, it's really wreaked havoc on our voter registration system in America.
It's one more example that when the federal government gets involved, they mess things up. Not every state gets it right. If you leave it to the states, some states will get it wrong. If you give it to the federal government, every state will get it wrong.
Well, that is a wonderful principle to commit to memory. When you leave it to the states, some states will get it wrong. But when you leave it to the federal government, every state will get it wrong.
It's true, though.
Yes, it is true. I love that. Well, gosh, I mean, I could actually spend all day talking with you because you've given so much thought. And like I say, you're a real thought leader on all of these things. And you've been a very impressive Secretary of State. And I hope that we can maybe have you come back. But I'm going to work on getting somebody to hold a hearing in Washington about maybe on the anniversary of NVRA, the National Voter Registration Act, in May, and have you testify about what needs to be changed.
I would love to do that. I'm sure Congresswoman Laurel Lee, that used to be the Florida Secretary mm-hmm. of State, would be a great person for that if you need a suggestion.
Well, you know, she's now the chairman of the subcommittee on elections of the House Administration Committee. So that's good. We'll work on that as a project. I'll make that commitment to you.
We did give her trouble. We used to have a text string where we would text secretaries of state, and we did pretty unceremoniously remove her from that because we said the federal government has no right to be involved in this text string.
Oh, there we go. Well, hopefully she won't hold a grudge.
She won't.
That's great. Well, Mr. Secretary, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your time. We know how busy you are. You've done a great job as Secretary of State, and I'll look forward to working with you on some of these projects before you leave office. And with that, that concludes this episode of Who's Counting. We hope that you will share this episode, subscribe, visit our website, whoscounting.us, and download the Citizen's Guide to Building an Election Integrity Infrastructure. Watch some of our training videos on how you as citizens can make a difference in your local elections. Remember, all elections are local, and we just don't want the federal government making us unable to have fair and honest elections. So with that, thank you for joining us. Thank you, Mr. Secretary. We appreciate thank all you. Your leadership. Thank you for joining Who's Counting with Cleta Mitchell, the podcast about America's elections. Please help us fight big tech censorship. Like and subscribe to this podcast and be sure to share it with your friends. You can become part of this election integrity movement by signing up to join the Election Integrity Network. Go to whoscounting.us. The Who's Counting podcast is produced by the Election Integrity Network.